Hi, friends. I don't care that the universe is a muddled ball of nonsense consisting of members of our own species designing weapons that they want to use to destroy other human beings. I don't care that we exist in a world where some of us around us, some of our dearest friends, would gladly jettison us from their lives for a bag of gold. I don't care that I'm surrounded by spineless human beings from time to time who are desperate and hungry, and in that desperation and hunger would gladly send me down the river. I've given up judging. I want to officially announce to all of you that from this moment on, no matter how disgusting and foul the phenomena of the material universe seem to me, I will no longer allow myself the luxury of being a cunt. And I just want to say this to the darkest and vilest of you out there. The foulest of you out there, the most simpering, stinking, cowardly, angry, unhappy, lonely, pissed off, bitter, and vengeful of you out there, that I believe that underneath that foul and cancerous coating of karma that has surrounded you, there is a glowing light more radiant than a million suns, capable of changing the entire planet and converting all beings on this planet from confused and perplexed, neurotic postmodern humans to whatever's waiting for us down the line. You're beautiful is what I'm trying to say. You're beautiful no matter what. And it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what you said 4 minutes ago to someone in anger. It doesn't matter what you did 30 seconds ago, 30 years ago, or 16 million lifetimes ago. You're a beautiful and incredible creature, and you might as well start believing it. I hereby, utilizing all of the powers in the universe that exist in the swirling atoms of my being, forgive every single one of you for whatever the fucking thing is you just did. For those of you who just punched a baby, I forgive you. For those of you who just made a baby, I forgive you. For those of you who just aborted a baby, I forgive you. Daniel Tosh, I forgive you for making that rape joke. And to the woman who heckled Daniel Tosh, I forgive you for your indulgent blog. And I forgive myself for saying your blog was indulgent. The entire planet, as far as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour is concerned at this very moment, is no longer festering and swarming with confused and angry bipedal hominids who've confused themselves as being eternal beings, but is now paradise, and we all exist in heaven. Praise Allah, Krishna, Jesus, all the demons, and all the angels that exist in this universe. I now acknowledge that the Logos, the eternal Godhead, the great laws of science and physics, the origination point of all things, is good. Okay, so go to fucking Disney World today if you're in California. Let's have some fun. Let's make some phone calls. Why not? Once I get done recording this podcast, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fucking call 5 people and tell them that I love them. They're going to think I've lost my fucking mind. I don't care. I'm done. I'm done with the fucking war. I'm putting down my weapons. No more fighting. No more fighting with anger, that is. You still have to fight no matter what. There's no way out of the great internal conflict. Don't fool yourself. I don't mean to become some fucking pacifist piece of shit with your belly exposed to all the gnashing dogs of the world. Don't let the force of cunts devour you, my friends. I'm talking about wielding the greatest weapon there is. Oh, God. It's the weapon of forgiveness. There's no stronger weapon than that. God damn it. There's nothing that cuts deeper than forgiveness. There's nothing that transforms things more than truly forgiving. Getting back to where you were before you even met a person. 5 phone calls. We're all 5 phone calls away from having a great fucking week. 5 phone calls. No problem. Write it down. Even people you barely know, you can call them and tell them you love them. Call them and tell them you think they're great. They might think you've had some kind of manic, you're in a manic episode. They might That's how crazy the world is we're in right now, that if you express true love to people. Now, on the other hand, here's where it gets really interesting. You could pick up your phone and do the opposite. You could call five people and tell them they're assholes. And nobody would think that anything was weird. They'd be like, yeah, I know. Call five people and tell them that you love them and then see what happens. I'm going to do it right now and then we'll get on with the podcast. Well, that was intense. Jesus. It's actually 24 hours later. The series of events that created propelled me into such a strange series of weird events and novelties that I actually couldn't get back to the podcast for 24 hours. So that's some potent magic there, you guys. Be very careful with it. I kind of underestimated the potency of calling five people and telling them I love them. I didn't realize all the different things that could happen, but it's all definitely for the better. Life, much better. Just about a billion times more intense. I mean, not all the phone calls were that good, but some were pretty crazy and for the better. So if you want to blast your life into the stratosphere, and you could end up in Tibet for making these five phone calls. You don't know what could happen. Anything could happen from doing that. That's high level chaos magic there, friends. So be careful, but do it. I would recommend doing it. Just know that you very easily within 24 hours could find yourself in an Israeli shepherd on a kibbutz for making those phone calls. Who knows what could happen? A worm could explode out of your floorboards and devour you. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Do that. Even if you don't feel like it. That's something that is really exciting when you begin to realize that you don't have to act the way you feel. And also you don't have to feel love to express love. Because if you feel love, that's just fireworks in your brain as dopamine and serotonin gets released. That's just genetic mating juice. But that's not, there's another kind of love altogether that has, thank God, is not associated with any specific feeling, you know. Because if you start thinking that love is associated with a feeling, then when you're not feeling a thing, then you don't express love. I'm talking about the realization that there are people in your life who, if tomorrow you got a phone call letting you know that they were gone, you would go into an intense and severe dark place. Those are the people you're supposed to be calling. That's what love is. You might not feel great about those people, but you still love them. It's very possible that some of these people, when you think about them, it gives you a kind of psychic indigestion. But you've got to acknowledge the precarious elements of living in the vacuum of space, feeding off the radiation of a sun. I mean, come on. We're just little water creatures swimming on the surface of a cosmic pond. Don't get too comfortable, friends. You don't have to do it how you feel. If I only acted the way I felt, if I only did what my emotions were telling me to do, then I would just be in bed playing magic on my iPad, covered in lube and sticky, dried semen. That would be it. That'd be my life. They'd have to come in and haul me away eventually. Just wouldn't pay rent. Figure out a way to get somebody to start delivering cheeseburgers into my house. Hook up my blender next to my bed so that I could make margaritas next to my bed. My entire life would be a series of Magic 2013 iPad games, masturbating to pornography and making delicious margaritas. And I would slowly degrade and turn into some jelly-like mass quivering on my bed, making sub-frequency bass noises that reverberated out through the neighborhood and made babies cry. I would turn into a vibrating sponge of horror, sending the worst vibes out into the universe and not caring that I was slowly collapsing inward. So don't do it. It's not how you feel. If it's how you feel, you'll never go to the gym. If you're waiting for the moment that you're going to feel like exercising, it will not come. It won't come. Your body doesn't want to do that. Your body's just a lazy old mangy dog that wants to stick its face in assholes and bowls of old rotten food. That's it. You can't listen to it. Don't let it convince you that it has any kind of power. Ask to see its fucking tax records. It won't show them to you because it's a quivering, lying blob. It's your id. Don't listen to it. Make the phone calls, please. And report in and let me know how they go. It's more intense than you think. It reminds me of the first time I did salvia. I always get into trouble with this stuff because I underestimate the potency of things from time to time. And I can remember being at this, right when salvia came out, I lived right by this store called the Ecstasy Store. And there used to be this stuff they sold called Herbal Ecstasy and all this weird shit. They'd sold MAO inhibitors and like weird stuff at the store. But the guy said, yeah, this is salvia and it's as potent as LSD. And I just thought he was so full of shit, but it was only $10. So I bought it and went home and smoked it. And it was, as you know, if you've ever smoked salvia, which I do not recommend, it is not a pleasant high. It is not just not to me. I know some of you guys love it. I've never enjoyed it at all. It's just no fun. Maybe I've done it in the wrong ways or something, but ugh, it was just not a good, but anyway, I ended up just on my back in my bed, deep in that insane salvia universe. And I remember coming out of it and being mildly disturbed for a day or two just because it was such a potent experience that I hadn't been prepared for. Now, the difference between calling five people and telling them that you love them and smoking salvia is that it will actually create shifts in your subjective universe, especially if you haven't been doing it, whereas salvia just creates interior shifts in the form of wild hallucinations and drooling. It makes you just maybe drool. I don't remember. I'll never do that stuff again. Make the calls. And while you're at it, why not go to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour form at DuncanTrussell.com, sign up, and let us know what happened when you made those five phone calls. You don't have to go into detail. I can't go into detail. It's private and intense, but it was pretty great. But go there and let us know what happened if you feel like it. And while you're at the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Forum, why don't you go pay a visit to the shop? We've added a new item to the shop. We're going to start stocking up the shop with more stuff. And our first new item is these awesome Duncan Trussell Family Hour stickers that we made. They're really cool. We're selling five for $5 or something, so they're not that expensive. Go there if you want to smack some stickers on your baby, on your dog, if you want to put the stickers in your church pews, if you feel like putting the stickers to mark, if you're in a mortuary and you want to put the stickers on bodies, do it. Put them everywhere. Put these stickers all over the place. Spread, pollinate, and spread these stickers all over the planet, please. Just don't put them on bombs. And don't put them on machines of death. That's my only request. So go there, get some stickers. Also, for those of you who've been waiting to buy shirts, because we sold out of almost all our shirts, our first batch of shirts, we ordered, I don't know, we ordered 600 and we sold 500. So we sold out of all the popular sizes, but The new shipment is coming in on Tuesday, and if you want to get first in line to get those shirts, then you should go to the shop and pre-order the shirts because they'll probably sell out again. So go to DougAndTrussell.com, check out the shop, and also, why not go to Audible.com and take advantage of this awesome free trial that they're giving us? If you go to audibletrial.com/family hour and sign up for a temporary Audible trial, then you get a free audiobook download. And if you've never gotten into audiobooks, which I can't imagine anyone who hasn't by now, they're amazing. They're because you can listen to them while you're exercising. You can listen to them while you're walking your dog. You can listen to them while you're sitting with your boring grandparents. You can listen to them while you're... I imagine you could listen to them if you're in a particularly hot firefight in Afghanistan and needed to calm down afterwards. You could pop in the Dark Tower series or any of the hundreds of awesome audiobooks that are at Audible. And we get $15 a download, so go do that. Contribute to this podcast that you love so much and that you have merged with, as it has merged with you, fusing your soul with the electronic pulsation of the Duncan Trussell family. The family. The only family. The human family. Come join us, won't you? Wow, that was creepy. Also, as always, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour is sponsored by one of the greatest t-shirt companies in the known universe, Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-Shirts manufactures some of the softest, most beautiful t-shirts that, as far as I know, have ever been invented. These shirts are so beautiful that if you happen to stumble into the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and you held up one of these shirts in front of Jesus, he would have ripped himself off the cross, yanked his hands from that terrible tree, climbed down the cross, and put on the Sure Design shirt. He would have put the shirt on and maybe gone back up on the cross, now looking so much cooler, so much more interesting than a naked Jewish hippie. Now he'd look like a cool guy at a yoga studio who got into trouble with the Romans. So go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com. Check out these incredible designs. The shirts themselves are made of a nanoparticulate, which can only be found underneath the scrotum of these monks that live in Austria, far, far up in the hill country of Austria. And these guys, they send up, they send people up there, and in exchange for food and water, the monks give them a few moments to wipe the testicle dander from underneath their holy sacks. And it's that dander that is used to create the softness of these amazing shirts. So go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com. When you buy one of these shirts, type in Duncan and you will get 10% off. These shirts are awesome. I've seen people wearing them to the shows and I love them. And finally, to all of you who have donated, God bless you. Thank you, guys. You know, it might seem weird to just send $1 or $2 to this podcast, but that stuff adds up. And if all of you sent me $1, sent $1 to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, then I would be able to do something that keeps coming into my mind and that I keep wanting to do, which is to go to India, because I've heard of this saint that is now living in the Kanchi Valley somewhere in India. And I'd really like to go say hello to a saint before I die. And I'd also like to do a series of podcasts detailing that journey from the United States to hang out with this enlightened being, which I've been hearing about. So every little bit helps. Every little bit counts. You don't have to do it. We don't expect you to do anything. You don't have to buy a sticker. You don't have to buy a shirt. You don't have to download an audiobook. You don't have to get a SureDesignT-Shirt.com. You don't have to do anything but enjoy this podcast. That's the most important thing. Let it pour into your ears and enjoy it and make you happy, because that's what we want to have happen in this world. Everyone, now, Please welcome, for the second time to the Doug Guttrussell Family Hour, an amazing philosopher and brilliant writer. He's written an incredible book called On the Warrior's Path. He's also a martial artist, a great father, and he is a brain melter. And this particular podcast with him came at the perfect time. I was feeling super depressed, and by the end of it, it was like he'd pressed reset on everything and reminded me of some of the most important aspects of existence, which are so easy to forget. But I'm not going to spoil it for you. Everyone, please listen, open your ears, and open your hearts to the incredible, the brilliant, and the super sweet Daniela Bolelli. Welcome. Thank you for coming back.
My pleasure, man.
So fill me in. How have things been going? What's been going on? What's the story? Any grand realizations?
I'm ready to conquer the universe. Other than that, nothing unusual.
Conquering the universe. That's such a weird thing, isn't it? That people actually have almost conquered the planet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and fucking it up in the process. So yeah, that's not the smartest thing ever. But yeah, that's the way conquerors throughout history are fucked up people. Like, you got to have issues to want to spend your time conquering other people, subduing other population, the earth, animals, whatever. It's like, dude, if you had a good life, you wouldn't be running around chopping people's head off left and right.
Like, don't they say that Genghis Khan, there's something, he made so many children that there's a vast portion of the population that you can genetically trace back to him.
Which makes you wonder, because if you are getting laid that much, shouldn't be just you be all happy and relaxed and mellow. Why do you go chopping people's head off day and night?
How do you have time?
Yeah, seriously. It's like you made like 5 gazillion kids. Why?
Yeah, why are you, how do you, first, yes, okay. Well, clearly he was raping. Like, there it wasn't like he was going on dates in between torching villages.
Yeah, I can see your point, yes.
He was raping. Yeah. It was part of the deal is when you went into a village, you would rape the women and then just continue on. And I guess he was just raping and pillaging everywhere that he went. But no one ever pulled it off. No one has yet to conquer the world.
No. There's a cool guy. I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't know. You ever read this? He's a Greek guy, Diogenes.
I've heard of him. I don't know anything about him.
He's a funny dude. There's this story that they say about Alexander the Great going off toward India and meeting Diogenes somewhere along the way. And Diogenes was like this wild guy who basically he owned next to nothing. He was sort of very anti-materialist, completely natural, you know, go with your instincts kind of guy. And there's this story that Alexander really admired him and so wanted to meet him. And he goes in the marketplace. Diogenes is there laying, sunbathing nude out there. And Alexander is all like, I heard so much about you. You're this great, amazing guy. I want to honor you. Let me tell you, you know, anything you want on earth, I'll give to you. You know, I conquered huge chunks of the world. Anything you want, I'll give you. Diogenes replied, okay, grant me this one favor. Can you just step out of the sun, please? You're blocking the sun for me. And I was like, oh my God, that's badass.
That's badass. And it's also, it's incredible because it's a multi-layered statement, isn't it? It's not just saying step out of my sun. It's saying, who the fuck do you think you are? Really think that you're the sun? You think you're the light? You're insane, man. Get out of the way. You're blocking the metaphysical light, right?
Yeah.
That's and this is like the, I think the thing that is the ultimate, must be the ultimate infuriating realization for conquerors is to, because what Diogenes did right there is he pointed out just the pure absurdity of that kind of way of life.
Right.
And also he threw out this idea, like, you're not, you have to understand that you can't intercede in the forces of nature. It doesn't really work.
Yep.
That infuriates conquering types, doesn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, the dude is all about conquering so I can grant you anything you want, and there's not a single thing that you can grant the dude that he doesn't already have, having nothing.
Right. When you get to that state of realization, it's almost a strange place to get to, I bet, because it's like you've almost tricked all of society, because there's no more... So many people are running off of this idea of conquering in their own way. They're trying to conquer the world, always running to get this or that. And that place that you can apparently get to, which I certainly haven't attained, but you read about it.
Right.
These people get to this place, they're like, no, I'm fine. You know, thanks, I'm fine.
And I mean, it's a tough balance because I, you know, when people are all anti-materialistic, at the same time, you know, if somebody gives me a Hawaiian villa tomorrow, it's not that I say, oh no, I'm opposed. It's like, fuck, give it to me.
Yes.
By all means, you know?
Yeah.
It's not so much the getting the stuff, is what you trade in exchange for that stuff.
Ah.
And most people trade all their time and energy.
Yeah.
And so then you chase this dream of happiness. Once I get there, I'll be happy once I'll have that. And in the process of trying to do that, you fuck up all your time and energy, which the only thing you really have as a human being is your time and energy.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, that's what you're trying to do to be happy? That seems kind of self-defeating.
But this, so, the but, you know, I, and I know people who are, I know people who are the prime example of that mode of being. I know people who are always seeking to gain success in show business.
Right.
And then when they get success, they're even more miserable.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
They get the thing that they're looking after, and they don't even get like a plateau. They go lower because they get, when they get into the situation they're trying, the place that they're trying to get into, when they gain access to the sacred cathedral, they go into the cathedral and it's filled with fucking assholes.
Right, absolutely.
And they're getting more mistreated in the cathedral.
Yeah.
And then they think that they're going to, then they try to get into a deeper level. They're like, okay, now I'm in the front gates of the cathedral, but clearly this is not the cathedral. I've got to get into the inner sanctum of the cathedral. And now they're trying to get into the inner sanctum, and every level that they get to, they're more and more miserable.
And that's why you can't conquer the world, because it doesn't matter how much you conquer. There's always, you're not happy, and then you want more, and you can't, you can keep postponing the destination forever, and you never reach it.
You never reach it because you are the destination. Yeah. And but that, now I want to ask you about that, because that's not a, this, what we're talking about here is something that I've has been on my mind quite a bit lately, because just understanding that you're not going to get to any destination through your material gain is not enough to doesn't make you happy. That's not a happy realization.
No, that's just making you not waste time so that you think you have to jump through 7 million hoops before you can be happy.
Yeah.
You realize that it's not that you turn happy, because you're right. Yeah, that doesn't solve your problems. It just tells you where not to go looking for it. But as far as where to look for it, yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole Diogenes story. That's what it's about, is you're going to be miserable or you're going to be happy whether you have $7 gazillion or nothing. It's a lot easier when you have $7 gazillion because your life is more, it's much more comfortable.
Yes.
But the point is, it's not that you're going to discover it once you have that. It's, you either discover it on your own somehow, which there's no recipe, you know. It's not that if somebody can say, oh, do 1, 2, and 3 and then you'll have happiness. Well, easier said than done. You know? But is, finding that is completely separate from how easy your life can be, you know?
Well, you, in the, but see, here's this, actually, I just read this, coincides with what we're talking about. I just read this, I'm on the Ram Dass mailing list, and he sends these things called Words of Wisdom.
Right.
And he sent this story, as a Zen story, of a kid is talking to a Zen priest and saying, how long will it take me to gain enlightenment? Mm-hmm. And the Zen priest says, 10 years. And then he says, but I'm going to work harder than anyone else to gain enlightenment. How long will it take for me to get enlightenment? He says, well, 20 years.
And he's like, the fuck, you know, he's
like,
right.
He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And the Zen master says, well, it's because, you know, it's going to, he's like, why would it take longer? He's like, well, it's because you're going to have, you'll have one, because one of your eyes is always going to be on the destination,
right?
Instead of both of your eyes,
yep,
on the journey.
Yep, yep, yep.
So that is a great story,
right?
But let's talk about it in real life, because mm-hmm. like I was like, I went to the gym today, and like I think the gym's a great place to sort. It's like a kind of temple-like place where you can really like understand your mind, because when you're working out, you can watch your mind go from the task at hand, which is just this dumb, brutish, simple, right, repetitive task. You're just pushing heavy weights. That's it. And you can watch your mind, and as you're pushing the heavy weights, your mind is jumping, is either focusing on the moment of lifting the weights, which is the best,
right,
or it's thinking about the next exercise you have to do, or it's thinking about what you're going to do after the gym,
right,
or it's thinking about how you want to look, or it's thinking about what effect you want to have. And every time it goes away from the exercise itself, the exercise diminishes, and you're not getting as much out of the exercise as you would if you could just be there.
Yep.
But how the fuck do you keep the mind from wandering in that way?
And that's the golden million-dollar question, because there really is no how. It's at some point, somehow, you get it. If somebody tried to tell you step 1, 2, and 3, there is no method. Otherwise, it would be simple, right? Everybody would do it every second. But at the same time, it doesn't mean it can't be done. But I think it's done through, I mean, it's such an internal subjective thing that there can't be an objective standard to teach you how to do it.
Yes.
It's a mountain of trial and error, and hopefully you get it somehow. And then you get it is always relative, because then you lose it again.
Yes.
And then you get it again. You know, you get, once you get it, it's probably easier to get it again.
Yes.
But it's not like you are perfect forever after that. It's like it's going to keep showing up over and over. And
you massively lose it. You don't just lose it in a little way.
No.
You can massively, massively lose it. And it's almost like if you gain that momentary focus in life, that thing wherever you get all the engines firing and you're experiencing that kind of beautiful acceleration, it's almost like there's more potential to lose it in an even greater way than you could have lost it had you never started out on this strange quest or whatever you want to call it.
That's why if you go all the way, because a little awareness is only gonna fuck you up.
It will fuck you up. You have to go for it all the way.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Isn't that death? Isn't that ego death? Right.
Yeah, it is, and it's not fun. It's not pleasant. It's necessary in some way, but it's definitely not a fun experience. No, but I completely agree with you, and that's why it actually freaked me out when you brought up the temple image for the gym. Because as you mentioned the gym,
you're gonna say stole
the line out of my brain. What the hell, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree completely. To me, it's that feeling, because it's physical exercise to me. I mean, if somebody tomorrow gave me the power never to lift 1 pound and have the perfect body, would be nice, but at the same time, that's not the point, you know. To me, 99% of exercise is how it's about consciousness. It's how it clears your head, how it puts you in the moment, how it makes it. To me, it's a meditation, you know. To me, it's something that few things like it. Sweating, you know, just good old-fashioned sweating, getting shit out of you through sweat. Man, it feels awesome, and it clears your head better than 10,000 years of reading books about spirituality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, it's more spiritual sweating like a pig after lifting weights than being in cross-legged trying to, I must relax. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. But I think that that's a funny thing about people who get into spirituality is that they will spend countless hours reading books.
Right.
Since it seems like spirituality is this kind of like has meditation or gaining a state of heightened consciousness or whatever you want to call it, it's a kind of more ephemeral version of what you're doing at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're never going to gain any muscle by reading books about lifting weights.
Right, of course.
No one ever got in shape.
Right.
Reading about bench pressing.
Yeah.
Yet so many spiritual people spend all their time with their face in a fucking book.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
There's no practice.
And that's the big problem. That's why to me is reading is good because it stimulates you, it pumps you up, it makes you want to go for it, you know, even like with something like the gym or martial arts or whatever, you know, reading about it stimulates you, fire off some neurons that make you want to go for it.
Yeah.
And it also deepens the experience a little bit. As you are in it, you may be able to go deeper thanks to it. But if all you ever do is read, come on, you know, it's like reading the menu without getting to order the food. Like, that's not going to satisfy you, you know?
Sitting around reading the finest menus from the nicest restaurants, and then that's it.
And arguing about it, you know, no, look, my chicken with beets is way better than it's like, who the fuck cares? You know, are you eating it or not?
Right. And that's the danger of, I think that's the dangerous aspect of, you know, spirituality, is that it's so easy to think that you're doing something you're not doing anything at all.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if you can quote the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or the fucking Quran or whatever it is. It's like, what are you doing when you're not in your house?
Exactly.
And what's going on in your mind? And that's it. That's, you know, that to me, I'm by the way, I'm talking about me.
Right.
I'm not talking about...
No, I do the same thing, totally. Yeah. But that's why it's good to be aware of it, so we don't overdo it in that direction and we kind of keep a balance, because that's what it's about. I mean, to me, spirituality is, you read about it, you do even some practices, but the point is, it's not even the practice. It's how you are when you play with your kids or when you meet your neighbor down the street. That's spirituality to me. It's like how it translates into day-to-day life.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just some dream escape that you might as well just drop acid day and night, and you can have your wild trip and it's fun, but it doesn't, unless it translates in your daily life, in who you are, then it's just entertainment. You know, it's like watching a movie.
What are some things people could do? Like if you could tell someone a few things that they could do as an exercise this week to get them their nose out of the books, or get them out of their mind space and into the physical arena when it comes to like spirituality. Yeah. What's some stuff people can do?
I mean, I'm partial to, I think it's huge to have a good relationship with your body. That's why to me, and not even, again, getting in shape or looking good, these are nice things, but they are side effects.
Know,
it's like, to me, is doing something that can, you know, it is not playing golf. That's not a it's not a sport, it's not a physical practice, you're not sweating like crazy. I'm talking about stuff that's intense, whatever you like, run, do martial art, lift weights, do yoga, whatever that may be, but something that forces you to focus because it's so damn intense, something that involves all your energy, that get rid of all the extra weird stress you have floating in your body and you just sweat it out. That in itself to me is step one to any discussion of spirituality before anything else, because it puts you in a different mental frame.
Right.
You know, it's then is to me, other things are how you interaction with people. You know, like one good game I like to play is just in terms of reading people. People that you have no idea who they are, you don't know who the hell, just taking a look at them. Better if you have somebody next to you who know them, and you get a sense of whether you're projecting a bunch of bullshit on reality when you look at reality, or if you can actually see somebody for who they are.
Wow,
and
that's cool.
If you can do that, that means you have cleansed yourself enough that you can really, when you look at stuff, that's, you're seeing it for what it
is. Right.
And if instead you're going off on some random bullshit that doesn't correspond, that's your proof that you are on a mental trip and you need to...
Right. So. That's fucking cool, man. Yeah, that's a big... That is a huge problem with people. I was just talking to someone who was telling me that, you know, I can tell right away if I'm going to be friends with someone, if I can be friends with them.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, that's good if you're right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're fucking wrong and you're slapping down some bad projection, you're missing out on big part of the world.
Of course. That's why to me it's fun to do it, play this game when you have somebody who knows somebody.
Right.
So that when you're commenting about such and such person, they can tell you you're out of your mind, you have no idea what you're talking about, or how the fuck did you know that, you know?
Right.
And when you get it, you seem like you're psychic. And you're not, because you're just, it's right there, you know, it's on their face, you see it, it's who they are.
You
and
see it, shows. You see the sadness, exactly. You see the happiness, you see whether they're lazy, you see whether they work hard, you could see the, you could see what, you can always tell. So that's good. Now, so a hard physical exercise, beginning to understand if what you're seeing is a projection of your own neurosis or the world.
Right.
So there's two. Now what's something people can do that's risky?
Because
that's another thing, man. That thing where you, and I haven't had one of these moments in a long time. Quite often it's as simple as like asking a girl out on a date that you're scared to ask out on a date. But you know that thing where it's where you overcome a fear block?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the... fear is the big one to me, because so much of life is limited by our fears.
Yes.
And we shrink to be in the shadow of who we can be because of our fears. And we all do it, because, I mean, fears are justified. Usually fear is because we are afraid of some bad outcome that feels like crap and we don't want to feel it.
Yes.
And so it's natural. But at the same time, the point is, doesn't matter how much you protect yourself, doesn't matter how much you try to avoid it, your worst outcomes are going to come true in one way or another.
Right.
If it's not now, it's because you get old and fragile, or because you die, or because you're loved, whatever the fuck. But something is going to happen that's going to kick you in the balls regardless. So to me, facing the fact that all your fear is only protecting you from life, is not protecting you from danger, because danger will find you anyway.
Yes.
It's scary. It's a weird realization, because it's like, ooh, fuck, old. The stuff I'm afraid of is gonna come true. Ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it's like Buddhism. You know, it starts with the realization that there's a mountain of suffering in life and that you can't escape it.
Yes.
Once you deal with that, then you can get rid of fear. Because what's left to be afraid of? That bad things will happen. Well, bad things will happen. So what? You know, and at that point, it forces you to take some damn chance, you know, go off and jump off a cliff with bungee jumping or something, go or ask a girl, you know, whatever that may be that scares you, but you wanna do, you know what I mean? Fucking do it. You know, you're gonna be dead soon anyway.
Right.
Play at least. Have fun in the process.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. This is the problem. Bad things do happen, and confrontation does happen. But I find that, like, it does. Still, man, it's still, you still end up with this icky. I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. Like, you still end up, like, bad things fucking happen in a moment, and then whatever the thing is, you know, you end up, who knows what it is.
Sure.
It's different for everybody. But how do you deal with that anxiety or that icky feeling? How do you there? Can you eliminate it, or is it just a matter of accepting it as a aspect of existing?
I think you reduce it enough that you can act despite the feeling.
Because
I mean, it's not like you're gonna be, I have no fear. No, you're gonna have fear, but you act anyway.
Well, fear is a requisite for being a hero, right?
Exactly.
If there was no fear, if someone wasn't afraid of anything, then there would be nothing. That, like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, exactly. So is no. I mean, I think is. Maybe somebody can do it. I can't. So good luck if somebody can have no fear. I'll have fear anyway. But the point is, acknowledge that, yeah, so fucking what? You know, I understand why you're here, but you're not going to control me. I'm going to go for it anyway. Maybe shaky, maybe tense, maybe feeling like shit. I'm taking a bitter bite that I can chew kind of thing. But go for it anyway. Because, I mean, really, when you think about it, you're going to be dead in no time. And then it's like, What are you waiting for, you know?
And the paradox is, this is the thing that's the paradox, is that quite often when you make the big leap, amazing things come to you.
Yep, absolutely.
Not all the time.
No.
Sometimes you make the leap and you end up eating fucking shit.
Exactly. And you have to accept that. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'll make the leap because good things will happen. Yeah. No, there's no because. There's no.
If there was a because, it wouldn't be a heroic leap.
Exactly.
This is a leap of faith. This is what they talk about, the leap of faith. And there's no way around this leap of faith. There's no way to know what's at the bottom of the cliff. It's a cliff that's got clouds under it.
Right.
You don't know what's under the clouds.
And the point is not even that under the clouds you'll discover this wonderful world and live happily ever after. I mean, if it happens, great, that's awesome. But the point is you don't control it anyway, so play in the process, have a bunch of fun. For that 3 seconds before you collapse, at least you can have a big smile on your face, you know what
yeah,
I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Just because who knows, you know, there's no, if you start calculating too much, you're out of luck, you know. And I do that a lot because I don't like conflict. I'm a control freak. I like to play strategy to avoid, you know,
yes.
Makes life easier. But at the same time, I also have to remind myself that as much as that makes life easier, you can't escape all the problems because you won't. And so what's the day when you can't play your smart strategy to avoid issues and when you have to deal with it? So once in a while, might as well just go for it. You know, even though you could come up with something to just deal with it. And if you go down in flames, go down in flames heroically.
And yeah, man. And you know what? It would be worse than not having that mm-hmm. thing to be afraid of is having nothing to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's hell.
Yep.
If you find yourself in a situation where there's no barrier, no obstacle,
right,
nothing to climb out of, no pit that you dug to climb back out of, or no shitty job to like mm-hmm. rise out of, or no bad marriage to transform or escape from, or no enemy to overcome,
right?
Ugh. It's you might as well be in a coma,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
no girl that's way out of your league to try to woo.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah, sorry, I can't help you in that department because all girls are just, I snap my fingers and they're all
I
in
know.
My feet. So
I can see it. When you, the thing about knowing, looking at someone right. and knowing what they're like, when I look at you, I think, my God.
No, it's not that easy.
Swarms of beautiful women must have.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's, but look, that's a thing that I think people don't realize is how when you do find, when you become aware of an impending battle
right.
and the adrenaline starts pumping and you know you've got to go for it in some way or another, people don't realize what a gift that is
yeah.
or how beautiful that is mm-hmm. and how much that elevates you.
Right.
As opposed to the numb blank.
Yeah.
There's nothing for me to do anymore. This is, you see these trust fund kids. I saw a documentary on trust mm-hmm. fund kids, the children of the richest of the rich, and they're just all fucked up.
Right.
And just out of it. They
right.
seem so sedated and just ruined by their... There's nothing there for them, it seems like, or they haven't found anything.
Yeah, which to me is weird because I like it all, you know what I mean? Pain, good stuff. In no way, shape, or form, I have any kind of masochist tendency. I gladly, you know, spend my days diving into ice cream and, you know, all the pleasure, fun,
yes.
comfortable stuff. I'm all for it. But at the same time, if somebody tells me all the horrible things in your life will happen again, each one of them, and all the good stuff that happened in your life will happen again, each one of them, I would go for it anyway. Like, let's do it again. It was a fun ride. Despite, because to me, even feeling like crap, I don't want to say I like it, because I certainly don't, but it's what's been alive is all about, feeling stuff. It's
right.
intensity. It's feeling that burn. Good burn, ecstatic burn, ugly, tragic burn, but
yeah.
that's being alive. Otherwise, what's the point, you know? If you don't feel anything, yeah, you're just like you're just floating through things without any. Yeah,
you're
not attractive. Yeah,
it's better to. Yeah, for sure. And it is a burn.
Yeah,
that's a great way to put it, man. It's a goddamn burn, and it sucks sometimes. It's the worst of the worst, man. But there's this is an affliction, though. this is kind of the affliction. This is what you're talking about. is. Reminds me of the myth of Sisyphus by
mm-hmm.
Camus.
Right.
And you know about this,
mm-hmm.
of course. Sisyphus, maybe you can describe it better than I can. Sisyphus pushing the boulder up
yeah,
the hill.
Yeah, and then keeps going. Is that
yeah,
the,
that's
yeah.
the story.
Okay.
So syphilis. Have you ever heard of the myth of Sisyphus?
Yeah. Sadly, not a myth, right?
Definitely
yeah.
not a myth.
Yeah.
I've never had syphilis, man. But
no, that doesn't sound like fun.
It doesn't sound like fun
no.
at all. But you know, I don't know. It definitely means that you've like been exploring the outer
oh, yeah.
reaches of the universe. I don't mean to diverge from Camus' interpretation of existentialism to
right.
talk about syphilis. But I will say this: One of the most horrifying things I ever heard in my life was a guy told me that his favorite type of pussy was pussy that had been infected with syphilis because it was feverish and hot.
What the fuck? That's just personal advice. I would suggest staying away from that dude. What the fuck? That's just so wrong on so many levels.
The worst thing I heard
in my life. Who is this fucking guy?
I knew him years ago. I'm sure he's dead by he's dead
probably
by now. He's definitely dead.
Yeah,
you're dead. He's dead. I'm sure he's dead. Right. If you're seeking out women with venereal disease because the sex feels better.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You know what that is? That's syphilis winning.
Right.
That's when syphilis has pulled a toxic. You know about toxoplasmosis? Do you know about this? Toxoplasmosis is some kind of fungus or a bacteria. I'm not sure which, but it exists in cat shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
And when mice get infected with it, it has the effect of making them less afraid of cats.
Mm.
So in a way, it benefits the cat because now mice won't run from it. And it, so this toxoplasmosis is kind of working as the friend of the cat.
Right.
It's living inside the cat, and the exchange is it's making things that it hunts to eat docile.
Right. Yeah.
But when humans get it, and many humans are infected with it, it makes them severely depressed and alters their behavior patterns. It like actually affects their behavior patterns. Mm-hmm. So if syphilis is managing to make people actually seek out more...
Yeah, there's a problem there, definitely.
That's a bad problem.
Yeah.
But it's not syphilis. Sisyphus, a man cursed by the gods to push a boulder up a hill and watch it roll back down.
Right.
Pushes the boulder up, rolls back down. Pushes it up, rolls back down. And Camus wrote a... excellent essay on this called The Myth of Sisyphus.
Right.
And to try to answer the question, well, why the fuck does he keep pushing that boulder back up the hill? And I think Camus said he's happy doing this.
Mm.
He's found, even though what he's doing is this absurd, meaningless activity,
right,
he's found in the act itself, he's found his own happiness. And also, I was just talking with someone about this the other day. They said there's an element of defiance in it.
Right.
So another thing that's fueling Sisyphus is as he's rolling the boulder up the hill, he's also saying, fuck you to the gods.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be pleased. I'm going to be as pleased with this
right.
as any of the other bullshit you had to offer me.
That's a cool read of it. I like that because, you know, in my mind, I was thinking when you describe it, it's more like that's the life of a good chunk of human beings. Just work some shitty job that you don't care for because it pays the bills.
Yes.
Why do you do that? So I can have... more money to do the things I want, except I don't have time, so I'll have to spend more time doing the work I don't want to do. You know, it becomes this vicious cycle, and it's ugly and nasty. And in this way, the way you read it, it's actually kind of cool. It's a way of finding something good, regardless of what you're doing. And
meaning in the absurdity.
Yeah.
This is the it's not the way I'm reading. I think it's an existentialist idea, which is look. Here's what it boils down to, and it boils down to this horrifying thing. The horrifying thing is if you decide there's no transcendent external truth in life, but there's only your own subjective interior realizations, you are now in the land of absurdity because there's nothing to find, nothing to realize. You're not going to realize anything because nothing means anything.
Right.
So your search for some kind of exterior truth is absolute futility and pointless. So you're fucked. You're in the land of absurdity. There's no way out of it. No real meaning in life except what you give life. And so now that's the balm or the answer to it is like, no, in that complete and devastating loss, there's this opportunity for triumph over the nothingness, where we project our own meaning.
Absolutely. Things. Where, to me, that's power. You know, when in the middle of the war shit in the world, you can find something to laugh about and smile.
Yeah.
Man, you're the man. You got it.
You got it.
Yep.
You did it.
Yep.
In the midst of all the lunacy, if you can find something to laugh about or to find stability in or find some in your own self, not only did you fucking, are you a conquering hero in that sense, but also, you can transform everyone around you.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to look at you and be like, why isn't he freaking out?
And that to me is another one of the things when earlier you were asking about practices. And yes. I was saying, you know, the body and reading people, you know, all of that. To me, a big one is also, and I don't want to sound cheesy, new agey stuff, but to me, having an element of kindness and empathy and just wanting to, especially if you work like a dog, you find a way to be up in the middle of shit to then spread it to other people.
Yes.
Or at least put it out there so that if they feel like it, they can jump on it.
Yeah.
That's to me spirituality. You know, it's because ultimately boils down to making yourself happy, making people around you happy. Doesn't get any better than that, you know. That to me is the point.
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. It's those weird moments of like, you can do crazy shit that is actually not that crazy. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here because I never do stuff like this, but on a whim, I brought my neighbors some organic strawberries today. And like, it's just a weird thing going over to your neighbor's house and you're like, what am I doing? Am I fucking, look at me. I look like I'm going to kill them. They're going to call the cops. And I knock on the door and their dogs start barking and their kid, a frightened kid, like, because like, that's a bearded guy coming to the door like, with fucking strawberries in his hand. It's like some Hare Krishna cult thing. Some cult thing. You think you're about to get.
Yeah.
But this my neighbor, she came to the door and her face just lit up. And she was like, thank you. And then you see the kid isn't scared.
Right.
The kid's excited because the kid knows he's about to eat some strawberries. And it was this novel moment. And it was amazing. It was so fucking simple. You know, it's those things. You know, like moving past this, the barriers of what you think is the way you're supposed to be to start jumping the fences and doing kind things.
And that goes back to fear element, you know, the fear that people are going to look at you weird or that what, you know, it's like once you get over those fears, then you can do things like that that's daring in a way. Not the same as jumping off a cliff kind of thing, but it's daring anyway because you're stepping out of the comfort zone of normal day-to-day interaction and you can do something that's cool, that's nice, that makes people. By the way, as I'm talking, I'm thinking we have some weird strawberry connection because last time we had that after you sent me an email mentioning strawberries and in the second I was reading your email I was eating strawberries. Today I was about to come over here and my daughter was trying to just shove this like gigantic plastic strawberry that's a toy and she was like trying to eat it and I was like, god damn it, you can't eat the strawberry, you're gonna choke like that. And I'm like, what the fuck is up with strawberries there?
And we just had strawberry margaritas.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, we had strawberry margaritas. So it's like there's some strange strawberry cult going on.
We have a strawberry connection. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. But I you know, man, I think that, it's not all about like, and I know I talk about it too much. I always talk about slaying your vampires or slaying your dragons or, you know, that stuff's great. But it's not all about the aggressive, offensive assault. It's also the courage to like do nice things to people that you would normally never do.
But to me, that goes hand in hand because people who are just nice and sweet, they can be nice and sweet, but when reality is going to roar their way, when the dragon awakens, so to speak, they are going to shrink because they don't know how to deal with it and they are going to get squashed by it. So all your niceness can only go so far because you can be bullied by reality.
Yep.
Somebody who's this tough, strong guy can handle the dragon, but then you're just an asshole unless you have the sweet, soft side. You know, you're tough, you're effective, but so what?
Yeah.
So to me, like going on the archetype of the, you know, the warrior, the princess, and the dragon, to me, it's about having both. You know, you have to have your warrior side, otherwise reality will kick you in the balls over and over again.
Yep.
And you need to have your princess side, so to speak, because that's the sweeter, softer, gentler part that allow you to ultimately be kind, enjoy life, feel love, feel something. And one without the other is very incomplete, to say the least. And I don't think it even works very well.
It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't work at all.
No.
People who are always nice underneath it, there's a fucking... They're always... Something's always rotting in them.
Yep.
And people who've got too much testosterone are just fucking boring.
Yeah, precisely.
But when you find the mix of the two, that's pretty fucking cool.
Yep.
That's a great mix. And also, there's dragons in people, too. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that.
Sure.
We're talking about the masculine, the feminine, mm-hmm. and then the dragon is the id. It's the darker,
right,
the foul, dark thing that lurks in your heart.
Fear, ego, all of it, you know, all of the dark, ugly things that step in between you being a nice human being and be able to have a good life. And whether they are external obstacle, sort of the external dragon, or the internal one, the one that comes from within.
Yeah.
But it's everything that basically stands between you and happiness. And
let me ask you this. This is a question I've been thinking about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What if you don't know what you want?
That to me is a big one. Because that to me is what you should do all through school. Spend your days making lists of what is that makes me happy. And you can be start as, you know, picking strawberries in the garden, you know, whatever. It doesn't have to be a productive activity.
Yeah.
But what is that turns you on, makes you happy, makes you feel satisfied when you do it? Go through list and list and list of these things so that you then start pursuing those activities and try to figure out how you can have a life that it's in sync with those things.
Right.
We never ask that question. You know what I mean? All through school, all through... People don't stop to ask you too much what the hell it is that makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember once I had this conversation with, it was way, way long time ago. I was graduating college. I just met this woman. She was about to graduate and we are chatting and she gave me this really bad vibe, right? There was something ugly and evil about her, but she was ridiculously hot. So I was like, who the fuck cares? You're a sweet, nice person. Let me get to know you, right?
Yeah.
But I kept feeling this vibe of like evil, evil, there's something bad there. And I started asking her, you know, what is that makes you happy? You know, let's cut the bullshit. What are you about? And I remember her saying, I don't have time to figure out what makes me happy. I just want to start making money. And I stopped 1 second and I was like, fuck, you know, nobody's hot enough for me to put up with this shit.
Right.
This is scary. You know, you're what, 22 or something, and you don't have time to figure out what makes you happy?
Yeah.
When do you think you're going to have time? When you start working 40, 50, 60 hours a week for 50 weeks a year until you're 65?
Yeah.
That's when you're going to have time to figure it out. You know, before you know it, you are food for the worms because you're dead and you have lived somebody else's life.
Yeah.
It's like, and so to me, that's. You bring up the essential question that everybody should start asking themselves from the time they can read and write to forever.
To now.
Exactly.
But it's not an easy question. And also, some of the things that make me happy are not good for me. Some of the things that make me happy are self-destruction.
Sure.
So what about that? What if the things that make you happy do not match what you would need to be healthy?
Well, then I guess that's basic math, and I hate math, but still, you know, if you realize I get 10 pleasure, but I, you know, get 300 pain after that, well, that's not a good math. You know what I mean? It's like,
there's a comedian I love named Doug Stanhope. Uh-huh. He's one of my, do you know him?
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite comics on the planet. And I don't want to butcher his joke, but he's got this fucking hilarious joke about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, with addiction, let me think how it goes. Addiction, it's not that it's a disease. Forgive me if I'm butchering this joke, you guys. I'm sure if you look it up, you can find it. With addiction, it's not that it's a disease. It's that some things are better than life.
Right.
It's so genius. Yeah, it's so genius. But it's like that. That's a... You know, we want the things we want,
right,
to be stability and a nice life.
Right.
But what if what you really want is just to be blasted on ecstasy, fucking tramps? That's not me, by the way. That isn't what I want. I wish it was what I want, because I think that that's a fairly easy thing
to obtain. That would be simple, right.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, not everyone had their desires. Sometimes your desires are... is what you want and your desires the same thing?
No, I mean, in that sense is, if you really feel that doing something that's really not good for long-term survival, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
If you just want your 5 minutes of glory and that's it, who the hell am I to tell you no? Right. You know what I mean? It's like, if in those 5 minutes you have the time of your life more than somebody who's worked 9 to 5 at some shitty job they hate,
yes,
will have for the next 50 years, yeah, I'm supposed to tell you no.
Right.
I mean, it's not me, so I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I don't get the let's get 5 great minutes and fuck it all up.
Yes.
So I don't understand it, but again, I don't need to. Because as long as it makes you happy and you feel that that's a good thing and you don't fuck somebody else in the, yes, process, that's the key element. As, right, long as you don't fuck somebody else in the process, go for it.
Do you... Because I think that, that people... I think that, you know, it's an easy thing to think, yeah, I just don't know what I want. But, yeah, isn't that kind of lying to yourself? Like, if you really sit down and mull over...
No.
The things that make you happy, which is, I like that you said that, because that's such a simple thing to do. What makes you happy? It's really easy to figure that out.
Backtracking to the question about, yeah, spirituality that you're asking, yeah, this to me is one of the key things. After you got your workout, you cleared your mind, you sweated, you did this and that, figuring that out, sitting down, pen and paper, writing down every single thing that goes through your mind that's connected with happiness, how you see yourself being happy, that to me is the key homework for life.
Yeah.
You know, everything else you're ever going to do in school, at the job, or whatever, it's a very distant second compared to this.
So
you guys know what to do, motherfuckers. Stop listening to this podcast.
Yeah, go write down what you want. And, yeah, if you want to find a nice, tight, feverish, syphilitic vagina... Go for it. We don't recommend it.
No, we really don't.
We're not going to judge you.
Right. And but if you got to that point, I don't think you care that we judge you or not anyway. So.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But there's something so glorious and refreshing when you come upon someone who's not conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like someone who just knows what they want and that and they're just going for it, and, yeah, that's who they are. I very rarely run into those people. Mm-hmm. I've very, very rarely run into those people in life. Usually people are either completely unaware of what they're doing, or they feel guilty about what it is that they want and are pretending, yep, they want something else.
Yep. Absolutely.
I've known people who want what they want, not because they still want it, because they wanted it for so long.
Right.
They feel like if they stop wanting it now,
yeah,
they've failed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, let's continue down a shitty path, because otherwise, that's never a good policy, definitely.
But that's, so many people get caught up in that work. Mm-hmm. So people will devote years,
mm-hmm,
in seeking out something, and during the course of those years, the realization will dawn in their mind,
right,
that this isn't what they ever wanted at all.
Right.
But they're identified as whatever that career path is,
yep,
that thing is. Now what do you do?
And that's where, to me, identity is a dangerous beast, because once you start believing in some external label of what defines you,
yeah,
that's where you are missing the whole point, which is you are in constant flux, you're constant change, and you need to go with what's going on here and now, not with some ideal projection that you created at some point in the past and it's no longer real. That's how all religions are born, how all rituals are born that no longer have life. You know, people go through the motion because, well, it made sense at some point, so we should keep doing it forever. It's like,
yeah,
it made sense 3,000 years ago, and now it doesn't, so,
right,
get on it. Do something else.
Yes.
And, that type of stuff is... but you know what? It reminds me, I just had this flashback when you were talking about people who do what they want. I remember I was in an airport sometime catching a flight, and there was this... couple of big, humongous bodybuilder dudes, and one guy then approached this bodybuilder, because I guess he was famous or something, and started asking him questions. And one of these guys was just so damn happy, and he was saying, like, you know what, years ago I saw this cover of this magazine, bodybuilding thing, and I said, that's exactly what I want, and I started going, and it made me so happy, made me feel so good, and so I've been doing it ever since. And, you know, that's not what I would want to do. The dude even has a weird body that, you know, physically, in every level, is not really my path. But you could tell that it was his path, because the dude had just this big, real smile. Not fake shit, not something he's projecting. He's really what makes him happy. So go lift some weight, big boy. Just makes you up. Go for it.
Do
you
it.
Know? Absolutely.
See, this is in the Bhagavad Gita. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, it's better to be an honest street sweeper mm-hmm. than a dishonest king. And that means you're going to be so much happier
yep.
if you let yourself entertain for a daring moment mm-hmm. the idea that maybe what you've been working on for years is yep. not your thing.
Right.
You don't want it.
Yep.
You really don't want it.
Right. Yep.
And then that exciting moment of like, oh shit, I could reinvent myself right fucking now.
Yep.
Be anything I want right fucking now.
I love those moments where you feel like everything can happen and you have no idea what's going to happen the next day.
Yeah.
And you feel like your whole life is scary because you don't know shit about what's going to happen in 2 hours.
Yeah.
But that means also that everything can happen. And yeah. there's this sense of freedom is amazing.
It's so exhilarating.
Yep.
And it's you know what it is, man? You're suddenly alive for a second.
Yep.
Instead of being this husky... this old fucking snake skin. It's like a snake
right.
shedding its skin, but instead of getting out of its skin, it's just keeping that old uh-huh. dry, withered shit skin on it as long as it can.
Yep.
It's like, I spent years building this skin. I'm not going right. to get rid of it.
Yep.
When underneath that skin is a... Have you ever seen a snake that's just shed its
right.
skin? It's so shiny yeah. and... like so much, some of the colors are so much more vibrant. And
there's life, right?
There's life.
Yep.
You got to shed that fucking skin, man. Don't cling to that shit.
Nope.
It's so good to know people who are crazy because it helps you. It gives you like, it gives you a vibe.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm crazy too.
Yeah. But crazy happy and crazy depressed, very different kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Crazy depressed.
No,
no thank you.
No.
Crazy happy, such a joy yep. to be around a crazy happy person.
Yep, yep, yep.
They're so great. A crazy depressed person, ugh.
No.
It's like being around someone who shit their pants. By the way, for those of you who are depressed out there, I understand, man. I go in and out of it too, and it's rough. There's like a, it's a, this is another question I have for you. Have you ever been depressed?
Oh, yeah, of course.
When you're depressed...
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard to act.
Totally.
It's almost impossible to act.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're a mouse in one of those sticky traps.
Yep.
And you really can't. No advice is going to fucking help you.
It feels like hell. And yes, nothing anybody can tell you is, oh, now I understand. I shouldn't be. It's like, it doesn't work that way.
It's like, no. I don't care. You don't understand.
Right.
I can barely fucking move.
Yep.
I don't care about your... goddamn strawberries, and I don't care about your fucking
right
snake no. shedding his skin. I'm thinking about shitting myself in my own bed,
right?
Because I don't want to move.
What
can a person like that do outside of going to a psychiatrist and getting on drugs? What can they do?
Right. I think we went into it last time, but to me, the thought that you can always check out is a good one.
Right.
Because no matter how shitty it gets, you can always put an end to it.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean that you should. I mean, maybe. Who the hell knows? But in any case, doesn't mean just having the option. It means you're never totally out of options because
yeah.
you feel that nothing... The moment you accept that that's an option, so you feel that you have some power.
Yes.
The moment you decide not to do it, okay, I'm not going to kill myself, that's power already.
Yes.
So that shows you that you do have a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of power.
Yes.
And then maybe you can use that tiny bit of power for the next choice of whether, are you going to shit yourself or not, you know? And then, you know, baby steps, you know?
Yes.
And then the next one to see how much you can stretch
right.
that power.
Right.
But just the choice itself that you have of, like, you're never completely without a choice, that to me is the element that reminds you that there is power left inside
of
you.
I love that, man.
To some degree.
It's like if you take... Because when you're in that situation, mm-hmm. a depressed situation, you're in a survival
yeah.
You're in a survival situation.
Yeah.
Very similar to being out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you need when you're out in the fucking woods, if it's cold, you need a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You need shelter and a fire.
Yep.
And the way you start a fucking fire is you take a flint, if
mm-hmm.
you have it, or anything to make just one little fucking spark.
Yep.
That's all you need, man. One little spark. One little fucking spark.
Right.
And that spark... if you're careful, that can start a fire mm-hmm. again, and that fire can warm the ice that's frozen you.
Yep.
That's cool, man. I like that idea, you know. I think that there's like you can do another thing I've heard, which I've actually done that kind of works, is the reverse action, where you do the exact opposite of what you want to do when you're in a depressed state.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're stuck in if you're stuck in the gravity of your bed, even though it's like hell and you feel like dying and you would
right.
just don't want to do it, you get out of bed and fake smile and then yep. start moving or mm-hmm. jumping or just, it's so absurd. And especially when you're depressed, it seems yep. so ridiculous,
yep.
but you just start moving,
yep.
just fucking shake and move. And like,
and that's where, to me, the body comes into the place, because, you know, the mind by that point is shut to shit.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing that you can tell yourself that's going to make sense, or you should relax, or you should do this. Like, nothing makes sense.
Yes.
But if you can just use the minimum tiny spark of just acting without believing in anything,
yes.
without thinking positively, without anything, just doing something. In that case, sweat, work out,
yes.
do something that's exactly the opposite of what you want to do. That in itself clears you of so much shit that then it makes it much easier to take the next baby step.
Right.
And because, I mean, think about it. It's like the fact that you go work out and an hour or two later you feel you have a different take on your problems, it makes no sense, because you haven't done anything
None.
To solve your problems. But physiologically, the fact that you fire off all your endorphins, the fact that you're not just... You even take pride in the fact that you move your ass and you got something going and you have that energy physically, it makes it so much easier to then make the mental leap to
yeah.
step out of the deepest darkness where you were. It helps a bunch. So to me, it's like when nothing else works, the body is huge.
Huge. Mm-hmm. It's absurd almost.
Yeah.
When you have been depressed for a while,
mm-hmm.
and because I've had this happen where I've been deeply depressed and just out of not wanting to do it, but just out of a sense of like, fuck it,
right.
I don't care, but I'm going to go fucking just run. I'm just going to go run.
Right.
And I don't want to run.
Right.
And you're running and it sucks. And then you're running. And then that one, maybe when you're running, you know, when you're exercising, you mm-hmm. cross, you turn that corner, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this feels pretty good.
Yep. Yep.
And then at the end of that, within like, you know, 5 minutes after having finished your run, all of a sudden you're like, I feel fucking great.
Right. Yep.
And then that's its own absurdity, because it's
absolutely.
Like, seriously, that's all it took?
Right.
Just jogging for a half hour?
Right. Yeah.
Is that how easy this fucking organism that I am is?
Right.
That's a bit frustrating.
No, that's a trip right there. And I mean, and maybe, yeah, you are really screwed. You can't run and your body is messed up and
yeah.
there's something that you can't. Then, yeah, you have to play other mental games to try to, and whether it is the finding the power and not checking out, or
yeah.
whether maybe you as a person have this strong defiant spirit, so you get, it perks you up when
That's
you
it.
Feel the fuck you moment to
That's
everything
it.
And everyone in the world that
That's
you
it.
Feel like is trying to squash you. You
yeah,
know, it's
brother.
Like,
That's it. That fuck you moment.
Yeah.
That's Sisyphus
mm-hmm.
is saying fuck you to the gods.
Right.
It's like, okay,
yep.
you're gonna fuck it. You think you're gonna
yep.
put me in this shit body,
right.
in this shit life, in a fucked up situation? Guess what? You will not conquer me.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
You're not gonna beat me. You're not gonna get me in this fucking way. And that anger
yep.
can push you out of it.
Absolutely.
In the most glorious way ever.
I love that feeling.
I do too.
I think one of my lines of everything I have written, there was this one line that I threw down somewhere that's about, let me see if I can remember correctly, something about answering hopelessness with a defiant smile and a raised middle finger.
Yeah.
And I was like, that to me is my motto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, because it's not denying that there's hopelessness out there. Fuck, I'm way too familiar with ugly, nasty things.
Yes.
So it's not that I have this new agey, you know, be happy, everything is good.
Yeah.
Don't be... It's like, no, man, I know dark stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that feeling of you get a smile when you raise your middle finger, say, you know what, fuck you. I'm still going to have 1 second in which I'm going to be happy.
Yeah, man.
And it's empowering.
It's that goal. It's like sometimes this happens in like war movies or
mm-hmm.
it happens in fucking horror movies, but it's the moment where the protagonist is backed into the wall against
mm-hmm.
all odds.
Yep.
And somehow that realization turns everything around. And in that last moment of fighting, there's this, you see this light in their face, or they're just, for once, they're fucking happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the war, isn't
it?
That's what they say. That's the fucking, that's the glory of war.
Yep.
Only in this case, the war isn't against.
No, it's internal.
It's an internal war.
Yeah.
But it's that sense of like, I'm fucking going to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be forced to kill me, universe.
Yep.
You will be forced to kill me.
Right.
But I'm not going to kill myself.
That's why, without stretching it too much, but when I watch movies like 300 or Last Samurai or something, to me, that's spirituality, which may not be the first concept that comes to mind when you're watching graphic violence, muscles left and right. But that's what it's about, because it's essentially accepting impossible odds out of which you're not going to get out alive. And you accept it, and then once you accept it, you get this big smile. It's like, what are you gonna do, scare me with death? I've already gotten over it. Fuck you. Kill me. I'm here. I'm gonna fight you to the last possible second with a smile on my face, and then you rip my head off. So what?
Yes,
do it.
Fucking do it.
Yep.
Go for it. Yep. I love that, man. That's really cool, because guess what, friends and family, nobody is getting out of here alive.
No. As Jim Morrison would say, yes.
Nobody.
Nope.
You're going to die. There's no way out.
Yeah,
I love it, man. Your philosophy is so potent, man. It really is. It's so uplifting. That's such a, it's so great, because we get so caught up in this fucking, you know, it's so easy to become passive and use spirituality as an excuse.
Yeah. Completely.
When it's better to, it's that fire of like fighting and deciding to really rise up against the weakness of your of yourself, you know, overcome yourself.
Shit, man, it was like a year and a half ago, little over a year and a half ago, there was all these nasty things going on in my life. My wife was super sick, and by the time we realized that there was no getting out, that the situation was so horrendously fucked up that there was no getting out, it was weird, because just because you realize it, I mean, it doesn't mean it's over right then and then.
Yes.
And so it's like, when I would step away and leave the hospital, I would have the hour or 2 hours break where I go take a shower, where I would collapse, you know, with the ripping into pieces. But then I would get back in, and he's like, what am I gonna do, whine and complain? He's like, put a fucking smile back on your face and give her something to smile about. Not bullshit, you know, not feeding her some false hope that's never gonna come through, but just something to smile in the next minute, because that's all that there is, you know.
Wow.
It's like, there's no good outcome, but I have power over this 1 minute, so I'll play with that, you know. And then the minute after that, and then the one after, and then the one after, and knowing that you're not gonna get out, but so what, you know. Just because once you accept it as horrendously, I can't even come up with enough adjectives, and how so fucked up it is, and it tears you apart, it also frees you from all the paranoia and the fear and the things that we normally have. Because once you accept that it's, you know, there's no getting out alive, as you put it, then you can have a good time in an odd kind of way. You know what I mean? It's that moment where you turn the corner and you're like, fuck it, let's play while it lasts, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, it's powerful. There's something there that's really, I mean, nobody defeats that, you know what I mean?
No.
But internally you defeat it because you stop letting it have power over you. And that's, and I think that transforms all your actions after that. Because, I mean, once you've gone against that kind of shit, it's like, how much worse does it get? I mean, I'm sure you can come up even with worse scenarios, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you have really dealt with the ultimate thing that, I mean, I've always been scared to death, literally scared to death of death forever. And so, and that has limited me like crazy in so many occasions, so many ways. And so once I realized that all my control freakishness, all my, if I do this, everything is gonna come out okay. No, if I struggle harder, when I realized that I don't control it and that things will happen anyway.
Yes.
Oddly enough, you relax. You know, and everything becomes lighter because...
Right. And what you just described is in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, the second as you know, Buddha is sitting under the Bodhi tree, mm-hmm. about to gain realization, and is tempted by three things. The first being the daughters of Mara, Mara being the spirit of right. death. The daughters of Mara come to tempt the Buddha. Now, the daughters of Mara are compared to the part of your mind when you start like making progress that says, says to you, wow, look at you, you're making progress. right. Well, look who's yeah. becoming enlightened. And it's like your ego.
Yeah.
But Buddha resisted this temptation. The second temptation or test was death. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, in the story, it's flowery, but it's like right. fireballs yeah. flung at and Buddha had already made up his mind when he went to sit under that Bodhi tree, and he said, I'm either going to gain realization mm-hmm. or I'm going to die.
Yep.
He'd already conquered death.
Right.
But when those things were flying at him, he smiled
right.
at it, and they turned to lotus petals, as right. they say, or they turned to yep. flowers and fell down to the sky. So what you're talking about is when the great dark force of the universe rears its head and you mm-hmm. find yourself in the inevitable hospital room with someone that you love.
Absolutely.
You have a chance to smile mm-hmm. in a real way
yep.
and turn that moment into fucking flowers.
Yep.
Whoa.
Well, if you want to hear a story that really is weird, what ended up happening eventually once, because she always knew she didn't want to, she was all about quality of life or nothing, you know.
What was it? What are this? Can you talk about this?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. She had, it was weird. It's like in September 2010, she started having pain in the shoulder. It's like mm-hmm. big fucking deal, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you sprained something. It's like by late October, it was getting so bad. They did diagnosis. They said, no, you have multiple sclerosis, which I mean is bad, but it's not, there are ways to manage it.
Yes.
You can do. Kept getting worse and worse and worse by January, so very quick progression. Goes in the hospital, she's hardly walking, she can't hold her arm up and all this shit, and they're like, oops, sorry, turns out it's a brain tumor in a part that we can't operate, but we can give you, you know, a mountain of chemotherapy and shit that may keep you alive for another 3 years in a shitty kind of way, but you know, you may be. And you know, the way she had always been was quality or nothing, so
yes.
she was like, yeah, fuck you, you know, no thanks. And then I remember when, I don't know why, because she was never formally Buddhist or anything, but she decided she wants Buddhist monks. And I'm like, what the hell? I'll find you Buddhist monks right now. I go down the street and there was a Tibetan temple with these weird Tibetan dudes who would come running, clutching Starbucks coffee. Because they were, I don't know what the fuck, it was a weird story. But in any case, they show up and they, one of the things they say is that when somebody stops breathing, when they go, don't touch them because they are trying to leave. And if you touch them, you cry in front of them or you do something, you're holding them back and you're fucking them up. Just let them go. So you step away, leave them there for 2 hours or something, then you can go back. And you know, once you go, of course, your face relaxes, you're not in pain, you're not tense. So it's better, but nothing eventful. 2 more hours go by. I go back into the room and I kid you not, she has this humongous smile on her face. And I was just like, what the fuck just happened here? You know, it's like, and her sister come in and we look and I'm like, she's fucking smiling. You know, she didn't smile when she went. She didn't smile an hour. What the hell is going on? And I remember I tried to take a picture of it because I wanted to remember that smile.
Yeah.
And when I lifted the camera, I couldn't see the smile. And I drop the camera and it's right there. And I lift it again and I can see. And that's when I was like, okay, the universe is so much weirder than anything that I can ever begin to understand.
Yeah.
That, you know, but obviously it made me feel good. You know, it made me feel like if you can die and then smile, shit. What can I say?
Yeah. You know?
It's, man.
That is so intense, man.
Yeah. To say the least.
Yeah, that, there's no words for it. Yeah, you just got to be brave enough to let go.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to anyway, you know what I mean? Because you can hold on all you want. And you're going to be forced to let go, whether you want it or not. So it might as well be a conscious choice rather than something that you're forced to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing the human capacity to shift, to transmute the darkness into the most beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like what we can do. That's what we can do. Mm-hmm. That's our power.
Yep.
And what's more, that's the ultimate power.
Mm-hmm.
That's better than turning lead into gold. You're literally right. Converting the yawning pit into paradise.
Yeah, because at that point, everything is fun. You know what I mean? You can find an element of fun into anything once you deal with the weirdest stuff as shit and find... I remember a couple of days later when we were going to have the cremation and stuff, and you know, you're going to into this environment that are not happy places, right? And the dude was like then giving me the bill, the guy from the mortuary place, and he's like, 2,000 some, whatever the fuck they charge, right? And I remember I look at the dude and I just pull out my wallet and I took out a quarter and then another 10 cents. And then I started counting coins and I saw the dude looking at me and just suddenly his eyes getting bigger and bigger, like, what the fuck? He's trying to give me $2,000 in coins. And so I started, after I reached like a dollar something, I just look up at him. I was like, I'm just fucking with you. You know? And the dude was on the floor. He's like, thanks, man. You know, I don't get to laugh much in my profession, but it's... Because at that point, you know what I mean? It's like, what is that not going to make you laugh? You know, it's like, fuck. Just...
You're a goddamn alchemist is what you are, man. Well, that's what it is. You're transforming the... You found a way.
Mm-hmm.
Where the rubber hits the road for you is you found a way to convert everything into these bright moments. I'm not saying you're capable of doing it all the time, but
definitely not.
You found a connection point. You found you're really good at articulating this. And it's helping me a lot. Right now, it's really cool, man.
That's why when I get worked up, like, I don't know, I'm playing with my daughter and she's a pain in the ass sometimes, and I get all worked up and I'm pissed and I'm angry, and I'm like, really, I'm angry about she throwing the food on the floor? In the great scheme of things, who the fuck cares? Yeah. Relax, you know.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't succeed all the time at it. There are the moments where I'm like, god damn it, quit throwing it. You know, and you get, and it gets you again, and that's when you have to kind of cleanse your mind again from all that shit and realize it doesn't mean shit and you can still be happy and find the...
You're the opposite of a victim. What you're talking about is the opposite of victim mentality. What you're talking about is it's number one, it's acknowledging that all phenomena could be converted into something mm-hmm. that at least is alive. At the very least is alive. At the very most is like this kind of transcendent, beautiful moment. But the other thing is you're saying you have to fight for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You have to make the decision to do that. You're the one who has to make this fight, and it's mm-hmm. the fight is worth it.
Yeah, because I mean, you're going to get ripped to pieces anyway.
Yes.
And I don't mean just the final outcome in objective sense, even internally. There's not that, I'm going to choose to take it positively and suddenly, you know, Disney music comes on and everything is happy, because it's not. You know, you still feel the moments where it just rips you to the inside and you have... So it's almost like you need to know how to deal with, you know, your heart got crushed. Now what? You know, can we move on? You know, it's like you need to be able... Because you're going to get there anyway. And you can either be, as you put it, the victim, where it happens to you and there's nothing you can do about it, or it happens to you just the same way and you find a way to roll with it, or to even raise the middle finger to it all and force a smile on your face and go with it. And again, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to work every time. I don't even know it works. I can only speak about the past because I don't know what I'm going to do the next second. You know, maybe in the exact same situation, I wouldn't be able to pull it off right this minute.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's not that.
Right.
But that's the goal, at least, to try to go
that
route.
And you did it.
Right.
The thing is, you already did it, man. And by doing it, not only did you do it for yourself and did you do it for your kids, and you've done it for everyone who hears this story, because it's like, just for me listening to you, and I think about like what happened to you, that experience, and how incredibly emotionally catastrophic, apocalyptic
right.
that experience is. And then I think about my own little like mewling little, you know, hipster doldrums that I fall into. Right. And suddenly I'm in, like, just invigorated with a sense of like, fuck that, man. I'm not going to fucking lay on my, like, I'm not going to show my fucking belly to this fuck universe over a few fucking crap days. You know, so it's a gift that you give in overcoming and conquering the dragon when it emerges as it did for you in that intense way. Because everybody else who maybe has smaller little lizards wandering around their house is like, fuck that. I'm just going to crush this thing with my heel and move on.
And that's the same thing I do for myself. Because like now when all the shit that gets to me, and then I think it in relative terms, and I'm like, really? I'm letting this shit get to me? Come on.
Come on. Know?
It's like, I've been through worse, right? This is going to bug me?
No. Once you decide to raise that fucking finger, man, it's time to party. That's what it comes down to. Once you make that decision, all this phenomena just becomes tender. It becomes not tender in the sense of soft, tender in the sense of firewood, fuel that you can use this that one moment. You're right, man. That one moment you decide, you know, I'm going to live. That's the spark.
Yep.
And you can set anything on fire with that, pretty much. Anything in this material universe cannot withstand that kind of fire.
Right.
Love it.
Yep.
You are the greatest, man. Thank you so much. Thank you, man. What a wonderful fight. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You're the shit, man. Where can people find you?
I just put together a website. So it's my name, danielebolelli.com. There's, I guess we'll put on your website the Twitter link.
Yes, that'll be there.
My website and stuff. And I'm going to email you a pic that I took a few days ago when my daughter had her third birthday, and I'm choking the hell out of me because she's a little zombie and she's like biting my arm and trying to kill me. So I'll email you that one.
Email that. We'll put it up, man.
Sound good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Star of Bethlehem, an incredible track from Neil Young's album Decade, available on iTunes. Go buy it.
Ain't it hard when you wake up in the morning and you find out that those other days are gone? All you have is memories of happiness. Lingering on. All your dreams and your lovers won't protect you. They're only passing through you. All that they can get to, and wait for you to come back again. It's still a light is shining from that lamp on down the hall. Maybe the stars.